Use your brain to putt your best. Jeff Mangum's Putting Zone.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, you'll get inside information on how to lower your scores through strategy and course management. We'll ask course pros, designers, and architects to reveal their secrets in an effort to improve your game. If you're a beginner or a seasoned pro, subscribe to the Golf Smarter podcast. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thank you for coming back for another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Just one announcement before we start our conversation with Jeff Mangum. In the past, I've asked you multiple times to tell your golfing buddies about the Golf Smarter podcast, and clearly you have. If you use iTunes as the standard by which podcast content is judged, and by my conversations with a lot of you, you found us through iTunes. Golf Smarter is the number one golf podcast available. So thank you very, very much. I'm honored and quite humbled by your support. But now is the time to pay you back. Starting next week, we're going to have an addition to our show that will mean more giveaways more often, great products that we're going to be giving away, and that you're going to want to win. But most importantly, discounts when you want to go shopping for golf products. So now more than ever, tell your friends to tune in to the September 5th Golf Smarter podcast, and hopefully our team will grow even more substantially. Now, here's a quote from the homepage of puttingzone.com. Putting is where it's at. You can drive it a mile, hook it on purpose, pitch it over a phone booth from 2 feet away, but if you can't roll it, you aren't going to beat many people. And personally, I'm a big fan of putting, but then again, I like to shoot pool and go bowling, too. Maybe there's a connection and maybe not, but I do agree with that quote. Jeff Mangum's Putting Zone is a wealth of information that covers one topic, putting. And so we say, welcome, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Fred?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for joining me. Listen, the puttingzone.com website that you provide is quite comprehensive. There is a ton of information on there, and it's all about putting, right?
Yeah, it shocks people. 50 megabytes of information on that website.
Wow. And again, but you are totally focused on putting. Why did you select putting?
I wanted to be special.
You are special, there, Jeff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. There are 28,000 Class A members of the PGA of America, but there's only five people in the world that have name recognition for putting instruction. So I wanted to be one of those five and the best.
Okay, well, here you are. You are recognized and you are the best. Now, let's prove
it. That's right.
Okay.
No problem.
It's not just a website. You obviously work with students as well.
Sure.
I've always felt like putting was a huge part of the game. I know there are people who think that, no, you got to hit the ball far to play well. I don't necessarily agree to that.
Well, the PGA Tour doesn't particularly agree with that either. Golf Digest recently had some statistics published where they analyzed the difference between how far you hit the driver, how many times you hit the fairway, how many times you hit a green in regulation, and how well you do with your flat stick on the green once you get there. And at the end of the day, they said hitting it long and hitting it in the fairway doesn't account near as much for winning and making money as hitting the green and putting well. And of those two, hitting the green and putting well, putting is slightly more important, both in terms of winning and making money.
And for the everyday golfer like myself, I'll look at a scorecard and see that if it's a par 72, if I divide that in half, 36, 18 holes, they give me two putts. They're expecting me to have at least two shots on every green.
Now, that's a little deceptive because the touring pros don't really have 36 full swings. They have more than that.
Explain that.
Typically, a tour pro that averages 28 putts per round, 28 to 30 is a PGA Tour average for putting total putts. And they're not, you know, they're shooting 70s. So they've got 40 full swing strokes, 14 with the tee, on the tee box with the driver, four with some other iron, usually on the par threes. And then the rest of them are fairway approach shots, full swings. And it's an unusual day for them to have fewer than 40 full swings.
Interesting. Never looked at it that way. But then again, yeah. I don't look at my golf game like I'm a professional.
Well, amateurs have more than 40 full swings, I can tell you that.
For sure.
So if they really allow themselves 36 putts, that's not really going to be as good as they can be. Most amateurs, if you're somewhere in the vicinity of, say, shooting a 10 handicap or even maybe a 20 handicap, the number of your putts is going to be a lot lower than that. Probably in the vicinity of 35, 36 putts would be what you'd shoot if you shoot 80 all the time, or 80 to 85. So when they say there's 36 putts for par out of one half of the 72, that's not accurate. If you're shooting 10 over par, you ought to be taking about 36 putts.
Well, I recently was talking to a guy who said, oh, I'm terrible at putting. I said, well, how many three putts do you get in a round? He says, I don't know, two or three.
Right.
I don't consider that a terrible putting job.
Well, if you ask any amateur at any golf course, and you ask them over and over until you got to 1,000 amateurs, how do you putt? 990 of those are going to say, I putt fine. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that everybody that shanks a drive on the tee box in front of the four other guys standing 10 feet away, everybody knows what a bad tee shot looks like. But on the green, everybody is about the same in terms of their abilities and their skills in amateur golf, and so nobody really knows what is bad putting. Everybody's pretty much the same. So two or three putts in a round, that's pretty normal for an amateur, but for a professional, they don't want more than one in 4 days.
And it's magnified. If the professional has a three putt, that's huge.
Oh, absolutely. One stroke is a killer on tour. If you miss a cut by one stroke, you get zero money. You wasted your whole week.
All right. Well, that's all good perspective, but we're not professionals here.
Right,
I'm not
right,
a professional,
right.
And my guess is there may be a couple professionals in this audience, but most of us suck. So
most of us are having fun.
Yeah, and that's the whole idea. Now, but let's get back to us.
Okay. Sure,
I'm going to
sure.
want to pick your brain about, I want drills, I want tips,
sure,
I want
sure.
advice, and I want to even ask you about the line on your website that says, use your brain to putt your best. Explain
okay.
that to me first, and then we'll get into some drills and tips and specifics.
All right. My specialty is taking all there is to know about putting and from 150 years of writing about it and separating it into four basic issues. Read the putt and pick a target. Aim at the target. Putt straight at the target. And putt with the right distance control to the target. Those are the four basic things that everybody actually does when they putt, and if they do them well, they putt well, and if they are masterful putters, they know how to do them well on a consistent basis, not a streaky basis.
All right, so let's review that. Read,
right.
aim, putt,
read,
distance.
Right. Read, aim, stroke, distance.
Stroke, distance. Okay,
that's
good.
It. All right.
Yep.
Now,
I'm taking notes.
If you look at 120 years of golf instruction, you'll find that it's almost all entirely concentrated on stroke. Many times you'll see the sentence, you can't teach touch. Paul Azinger said it about Tiger Woods at the British Open on Sunday. He said, look at that touch. Can't teach that. Well, you can teach it. You just have to know how. Golf guys don't really teach it because they haven't figured out how to teach touch. There's a pretty good body of science about how to do it that just hasn't made it to golf yet. How to aim the putter. No one in golf history can tell you how to look at a putter and decide in a physical way where exactly that putter is pointed. 99% of all golfers misaim their putters and don't know exactly where they're pointing them. That includes professionals. That's according to studies of thousands of professionals aiming their putters. Back in about 2001 or so, Dave Pells met Colin Montgomery in Oregon, and showed him with a laser that despite 35 years of professional experience and every teacher in the world teaching Colin how to putt and how to play, he was misaiming his putter and wasn't aware of it. So what do you do about that? He didn't know what to tell him. Well, I can teach how to look at a putter and know where it is aimed because I know how the human body works for that. And green reading is a similar thing. Everybody talks about you can read grain, you put the greens break away from the mountains and towards the water, but that's about all they say. Well, there's a lot more to say about how the human body works in terms of perceiving slope and reading what's going to happen with the ball on the green. I teach all that. So for 120 or so years worth of putting instruction on these four issues, golf instruction is not very good on three-fourths of those. And the one that it deals most with on stroke, there's obviously a big difference of opinion on whether you should make a stroke straight back, straight through, or around a gating stroke around your feet. And my job is to sort all that out and make reasonable choices and decisions about it and tell you what's best. That's what I do.
Okay. So I'm going to want to go over inch by inch on this one on read, aim, stroke, and distance. If you don't mind, I know this is a free lesson, but I want this information from
you. That's what I'm here for.
But I'm curious, even before we get there, how do you select a putter? I know that recently, last year, a friend of mine said, happy birthday, here's a putter for your birthday. And I love my putter. But going into a store, and I said, how do you help me pick a putter? And they all looked at me like, you're on your own, buddy. I didn't find it very funny, Jeff.
Oh, that's okay. I'm laughing because I know that's exactly the case.
Yeah, they're like, you know, it's like I can teach you on, I can look at your swing and tell you what kind of flex you need on your shaft and your grip and the club head size. But when it comes to a putter, you really are out in the dark. So if I'm in the market for a putter, what am I looking for? How do I do that?
First, you have to know how to make a stroke. And there are choices to be made about your postures and that sort of thing, the way you move. But once you've got your stroke sorted out, it is about how the human body is going to move with your stroke, your setup and your postures and your movement. And once you have that, then you can fit a putter to your stroke to optimize your chances of performing what it is you think you're supposed to do. But if you pick the putter without first getting the stroke fixed, it's kind of like Cinderella getting fitted for a pair of slippers, and the salesman just brings her whatever the salesman wants to bring her, a size 8 when her foot's a size 9.5. That's not going to work out. You fix the stroke first, and then you fit the putter to the stroke. So the question becomes, how do you, you know, what's a good stroke?
Yeah.
If you can't sort that out, you can't fit a putter.
Yeah, but stroke was part 3 of your read, aim, stroke, distance.
Right.
So should we start at stroke or should we start at read?
Well, it's more logical to start at distance control, to tell you the truth.
Really? So you start from the back working forward. Just like when you're on the tee box, you should start by placing the ball in your mind on the next to the flag and work your way backwards, right?
Right. Something like that. Let me explain to you just a little. Stroke and distance control are both movements. Reading a putt and aiming a putter are both perception issues. So everything really boils down to perception and movement, and when you think of it in those terms, that sounds a lot like how does the brain and the body work. So I started studying the brain and the body. The sense that it makes to teach it in this order. First is distance control, and then is stroke. And when you get the right distance in the right line, you basically have learned how to have a gun that shoots straight. It shoots where you point it. Once you got a gun that shoots where you point it the right distance, then the question is where you want to point it. What do you do for target, and what do you do for aim? And so that's the way I teach it. I teach first distance control, and then I teach the line or the stroke, and then I teach the reading and the aim.
Okay.
Okay.
Teach me how to read.
Okay. Let me teach you how to touch first.
Teach me how to touch.
Because, and here's the reason. If I teach you distance control, it will make a very big difference to 3 of the 4 things. It will obviously relate to distance control, but it will also relate to reading putts. If you think about the speed of the ball between your feet and the cup, it has some indefinite starting speed that you don't really know, but it always has the same ending speed at the end of the putt if you have good touch or distance control. It goes in the cup, right?
Right, and you just you want it to go fall over the front ledge or just kind of like fall into the middle?
I personally say two at the lip, which is two revolutions at the lip.
What does that mean?
That means that the ball will die deep to the back of the wall.
Okay.
And one at the lip will not even hit the back of the wall. It goes deep all the way to the bottom of the cup.
Okay.
Two at the lip hits deep, low on the wall. Three at the lip will hit about midway on the back of the wall. And four at the lip will hit near the top of the plastic liner inside the hole, near the dirt.
Good.
Five at the lip and six at the lip are just crazy. Don't use them.
There they go.
That's right.
See you later. Don't forget to write.
That's right. But if you have a consistent touch, all putts on all distances, uphill, downhill, breaking, straight, doesn't matter, short or long, they all end up going in the hole the same way. And my particular choice is two at the lip. I'll tell you more about that later. But the pertinence for distance control and touch to reading is that's how you learn to read accurately what the ball is going to do nearest the hole, which is the only place it ever counts. So if you can accurately anticipate and predict the path of the ball over the final 3 feet into the cup, then you can read that putt and you can do everything else you need to in terms of picking targets and aiming.
Now, I'm going to stop you for a second.
Sure.
Final 3 feet?
Mm-hmm.
That's the critical element?
Absolutely.
Hmm.
If you have the same touch on all putts, you have presumptively only one delivery speed that you ever use, and that's the same as saying one speed, one read. There's only one line to look for. If you want to look for multiple lines, you better have multiple delivery speeds that you're good at, which you don't. You'll have one delivery speed that is your preferred delivery speed for all putts, and so right out of the box, you're only looking for one line into the hole, one path, one curve, one break. And that's the secret behind all the great putters from history, for reading putts anyway. So you can read the last 3 feet, and you could actually go over there and draw it with your finger backwards out of the hole. And after you can get that final 3 feet, you can extend that curvature all the way back to where the ball sits at your feet, and there'll be a point where it straightens out. And that is your start line. Where that line straightens out, you shoot right across that that whole curving path like shooting a harpoon across the back of a whale. If you shoot your putt on the high side of that curve and start it on that straight line where that break straightens out near your ball, then the only remaining question is how hard or how far do you hit your putt? But it's touch that shows you those last 3 feet. It's your consistent delivery distance control that allows you to be a good reader of putts. If you don't have good distance control, you're not going to be a good reader, period. Okay, so touch is, or distance control, is obviously important for distance control, is obviously important for reading, or is not so obvious important. The third thing that is not even close to obvious that it's important for is that it's important for the straightness of your stroke. When you have good distance control, that means that you have consistent timing in your stroke. Some people refer to it as tempo. You need some definition there on what you mean by tempo. But if you have good timing in your stroke, the same timing consistently, every putt has the same timing. And that means you know where the putter is supposed to be when and where it's supposed to be elsewhere later. For example, you always know how long it takes to get to the top of the backstroke. Whether it's a short backstroke or a long one, you always know how long it takes to get there. You always know how long it takes to get from the top of the backstroke to the exact bottom of the stroke right under your nose. And knowing that and being able to do that consistently with the timing is what makes your strokes accurate, straight, and solid. So distance control, because it relies so much on tempo and timing, is actually the foundation for straight putts as well. That's why I teach distance first.
We're going to have to go over some distance drills, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You want me to do that now?
Sure. Let's go for it.
Okay. All right. Let's go for it. Okay. For distance control, there are five things that are involved, and four of those you're just simply familiar with, and the fifth thing you only do. There's only one that you actually do. The five things are you're familiar with your ball. If you change it, you're going to change your touch. A hardcover ball goes farther than a softcover ball for exactly the same stroke. So whatever ball you use, you're familiar with it, practice with it, play with it. If you change it, you're going to have to go through a little adjustment to get used to the second kind of ball. The second factor is your putter. A heavy mass of a putter head versus a light putter will send the ball farther for exactly the same stroke. So if you have a heavy putter, you're going to have not so big strokes to go 20 feet. If you have a lighter putter, you're going to have a bigger, longer, faster stroke to get that same 20 feet covered. Doesn't matter, though, because you only play one putter and you're used to it, so you don't have anything to do. If you change putters, you just have to get reused to it.
All right. Took the words right out of my mouth.
Right. Third factor is the green speed. That's a daily get-used-to-it affair. You have to get used to the green speed every single day.
So the importance of practice putting before your round.
Right.
You think that practice putting is more important than hitting the range?
No. It's a sequence where you got to bring all your tools to the game.
Okay.
The fourth thing, I'll tell you more about getting used to the green speed real quick in just a second. That'll be the first tip. The fourth thing is your timing pattern or your tempo, and a lot more about that in just a second. The fifth thing is how far do you want the ball to roll on the surface? And that's where the neuroscience comes in and teaches you how to teach touch. Of those five things, the only one that you actually do is turn your neck from looking at the ball to facing the target. And that neck angle that you get is feeding straight into your brain and helps your brain use the other four things that you're familiar with to generate exactly the right backstroke, exactly the right impact speed at contact for rolling your ball with your putter on that green that distance with your tempo. So you turn your neck and you count to two.
What do you mean?
That's why I have to tell you about the tempo and timing a little bit more.
Okay.
All right. If you make a backstroke.
Yeah.
And then make a downstroke. Most golfers think that that's really one movement, and your voluntary muscle activity makes the backstroke, and your voluntary muscle activity makes the downstroke. And those golfers are not near as good as they could be. The better you get as a golfer on the green, the slower you get, and the less you rely for the downstroke on you doing anything. The great quote is from Ben Crenshaw after 35 years of tinkering around with putting. He said, "Once I move the putter back from the ball, it seems as if the stroke completes itself."
Hmm.
There is a voluntary motion going back, but there's next to nothing coming forward. The other way of saying that in the history of golf has been let the putter head do the work and that sort of thing. Soft hands. Don't manipulate the putter, don't guide the putt, all those kind of things. When you boil all the junk away, what happens is you make a backstroke, you hold still at the top of your neck or the base of your neck, which is the pivot, and then you let the stroke transpire by itself in gravity. And that's like a pendulum thing. If you took a pendulum and you just kicked the rod back and then got out of the way, it'll swing across the bottom and to an equal height on the other side. And the amount of time it takes to go from top of backstroke to top of through stroke depends only on the size of the stick. A putter has a tempo just because it's a stick in gravity. A 35-inch conventional putter has a tempo of top of backstroke swinging under to the bottom and then up to the far side an equal distance on the follow-through, it takes a 35-inch putter approximately 1 second to do that. You can just take a putter in your fingertips and hold it and then pull it back a certain distance, let go, and then count it. That's how long it takes. It never, ever varies. The stick itself has its own timing. The better the golfer gets in terms of letting the stroke do itself, the more that downstroke and throughstroke timing approximates the natural tempo of the putter. So the timing that I teach that you need a timing so that you can know what's where when, so that your strokes will be straight, and you need a timing so that your brain doesn't get confused about how to give you the backstroke to roll the ball the right distance. But among all the tempos and timing patterns that you could choose, there's one that's sitting right there staring you in the face, and it's the one that gravity gives sticks in earth. The human arm is about the same as a putter for an adult male. And if you toss your arm out to the side and then let it flop back to your leg, it will take a half a second to hit it. And it will always take a half a second, whether it's a short distance out, flop back to the leg, or a long distance out, flop back to the leg. Every single one of those takes a half a second. Any golfer that wants to try it, just flop your arms out to the side and see how long it takes to hit your leg.
I'm so glad I'm in a room by myself right now because I'm sitting here flapping like I'm about to start flying.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Okay, well, that system, that means that gravity has been trained in your brain ever since you've been born to that timing pattern. So among the tempos that you could pick, there's one that's staring you right in the face, and that's gravity. You already know what it is, and you don't have to do anything to make it be perfect. You don't have a voluntary downstroke. You simply let the stroke complete itself, just like Crenshaw said. And when you do, that means that gravity handles the timing, and gravity is better and more exact and more the same every single time than the human could possibly be. So with all that in mind, I personally teach what I call a one-potato-two tempo. One potato is the backstroke, and then the two said to correspond to exactly what gravity does. So if you just flopped your arms out and let them hit your legs, flop it back so that that's one potato flop out, two it hits your legs, and you said that so that what you said conformed to the way gravity actually moves your body, that would be a good putting tempo. That would be the one I'd recommend.
And that would be the time we take a break.
As we make the turn, we want you to know that we're taking requests. If you'd like us to feature a specific course on Golf Smarter, our email address is golfsmarter@ttour.com. That's golfsmarter, one word, @TEETOUR.com. Whether you're planning a golf vacation, playing in an upcoming tournament, or have a favorite course for which you have a question, please let us know and we'll do a show just for you. Again, here's your host for Golf Smarter, Fred Green.
All right, we're back with Jeff Mangum of the PuttingZone.com. And now, Jeff, now that we've got our tempo, now what?
Well, if you learn how to say your tempo, the backstroke is you. You basically make a backstroke that lasts one full second. The downstroke to the bottom of the stroke takes half as long, but you don't do that part. You just toss it back, and the putter will glide to a conclusion at the top of the backstroke at the end of one potato. That's a one full second backstroke. What is happening is that the targeting action of turning your face from the ball to the target feeds into your brain so that your brain will calibrate exactly how far back that backstroke needs to go. And then the downstroke will accelerate from zero to impact. And the thing that's important to notice is that every backstroke length, because of the downstroke swing, starting at zero and speeding for a certain distance, and then it gets to the bottom, a short backstroke reaches the bottom with a slow velocity at the bottom of the stroke. A long backstroke accelerates longer and reaches a peak speed at the bottom of the stroke that's faster. That's all very interesting, but what's important is that when you have a stable tempo, and gravity is more stable than a human tempo, every backstroke size corresponds to one and only one velocity at impact. And it never changes day to day. Walk around like you have a dial in your body of backstrokes equals impact speeds.
Right, but how does that help us teach to read distance?
You don't have to, is what I'm trying to tell you. It's so fabulous that all you do is turn your neck from the ball to the target and count your backstroke and let the downstroke happen, and you get the distance that you want.
Do that again. You lost me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Distance
control is not about the conscious brain. It's not about learning rules. It's not learning how to do it. It is simply look to the distance that you want the ball to roll and then make a well-timed, same-tempo backstroke, and you're done. If you looked 17 feet away across the green, that you were familiar with the speed of the green, you're familiar with your ball, you're familiar with your putter, and you're going to stick to your timing, you turn your face from ball to hole, and then you turn your face back to ball, and then you go one potato backstroke, and however far back it goes is not up to you, it's up to instincts. It's up to non-conscious brain processes that the conscious brain has nothing whatsoever to do about.
So you're using the momentum of the turning of your head as a guide?
Yes, sir. Let me explain that in more detail. Neck.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, because people don't understand how simple it really is. And if you go into the details a little bit, they go, my God, it is that simple.
Awesome.
Here's the detail.
Okay.
The human brain targets locations in space, objects, threats, places, in relation to the body for purposes of doing something about it. If a tiger's jumping for your neck, you got to know how to get out of the way. If a banana's hanging on a branch, you got to know how to pick it. If a ball is sitting there at your feet and you want to roll it into a hole 17 feet away, you got to know how to stroke it. All right? So the human brain is using different systems of senses to figure out where things are, but they're doing it, they're using the senses only for the purpose of the action of the body. Now, the action of the body is more in the trunk, the upper trunk, the arms and limbs, the chest. The eyes right in the head. Between the head and the trunk is the neck. And as you turn your head around in space all the time, your brain is keeping track of the turning of the head in relation to the trunk so that you can do what you need to do when something comes up. If somebody walks into a room to your left, they come in the door to your left, and you turn your head to the left, that's all fine and good. You know somebody's coming through the door. But what if you were going to shake hands with them? It's more important that if you're right-handed, it's more important that your trunk and your right arm knows what to do about it, where they are, how to reach for them. So the neck plays a very important role in relating the eyes to the acting part of the body. And because of that, the neck is loaded with location nerves to figure out where your face is pointing, where your head is turned. And your brain tracks that, and it does it every single day you're awake. So when you basically, if you looked at your a ball at your feet, and then you rolled your head sideways so many feet along the ground and stopped, it's like you're pointing a dimmer switch or a dial along the ground, and every angle of neck turn corresponds exactly to one and only one distance along the ground. Your brain knows all this. That's what you do with your brain every single day. And there are nerves in your neck that are used to track that. And those nerves, when you make that angle with your neck, they run straight in your brain as the last piece of the puzzle. And your brain says, as long as you stick to your tempo, I'll give you the backstroke. Don't screw me up on the timing, and I'll get you there. And I'll roll this ball exactly as far as you want it to go, no farther.
You know what, Jeff?
That works.
This is making sense.
Yeah. Oh, yes, sir. I can teach veteran golfers way better touch than they've ever seen before.
Wow.
I do it all the time. People who teach other people, they say, I've never heard a thing, any of this in my life of teaching golf for 30 or 40 years, but it's the best I've ever heard. And that's the common reaction, because this is where the very best golfers eventually get to if they keep at it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, including 95% of the PGA Tour, they don't ever get there. They don't know this because it's not taught in golf. And it all comes out of the human neuroscience of how the brain runs the body.
Awesome.
That's why I was saying earlier, you know, I appreciate Fred Shoemaker's work. I've studied his stuff pretty good. There's a lot of things in there that we do that are common.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me tell you about how you appreciate the green real quick. This is a tip.
Okay, good. Give us this tip because we're running out of time here. People have to get back to work.
All right, well, here's the tip.
Okay.
Core putt.
Say one more
time. Because you have core putt,
okay.
There's one putt that you can always make day after day using your little internal dial of backstrokes and distance. Just pick a backstroke, and one just slightly outside your foot's great. As long as you pick the backstroke the same twice and you stick to your tempo twice, that means that your putter will impact two balls with exactly the same velocity, the same speed of impact. And that means that regardless of the green speed, those balls are going to go exactly the same distance. Well, that means that you are, in effect, your own stimp meter. That's what a stimp meter does. It just rolls, it gives all balls the same exact same velocity off the bottom of the ramp. And then you wait and measure to see how the green friction is working that day. Well, for you personally, the number of the stimp meter doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But what does make sense is if you have a core putt and you make two putts exactly the same backstroke, same tempo, same distance, and then you look at that distance, that calibrates your putting tempo and your set of backstrokes to that green. You just walk out on a green, you put two balls down, you make a short backstroke, stick to your tempo, don't care how far it goes, pull the second ball over, make the exact same backstroke, stick to your tempo, it will go the same distance. And when you've got those two together, that means that you did the right backstroke, the right tempo, and then you look how far they went, and you say, that's my basic stroke. Let's rock and roll.
Wow. I laugh at that because in the book Zen Golf, I think that's where I picked it up from, one of the tips that he gives is take three balls, don't aim for a hole, just go onto the practice putting green, don't move your head at all, and take three strokes.
Sure.
And that distance, count out that distance where the ball go, and they should all end up around the same spot. Right. And again, you're back at your stimp meter. So I've always done that. It's like okay, let's gauge the speed of this practice green right here, and you're basically substantiating that.
Bobby Locke used to do something like that. There's an obscure little book by Dick Mayer, played with Bobby Locke, and he tells a little secret that Bobby Locke shared with him one time. He just goes on a green, puts two balls to nowhere in particular, makes them go the same distance, and then he's getting used to the green.
It's a good one.
Yeah. This is just part of a total system, though.
Yeah, and you can find a lot more about the system, and theputtingzone.com has a lot of information, and you can always get to Jeff through that, or you can contact me, and I can get you to Jeff. Theputtingzone.com, Jeff Mangum, thanks so much.
Thank you, Fred. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. Let's do it again.
Oh, I think we're going to have to because, you know, I told you before we started this thing, I make a list of things I want to discuss, and then I just go through
right.
it. I have right. one check mark on that page.
Oh, Lord. God.
Which means we're definitely going to have to speak again.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay, great, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Fred. Bye.
Well, I hope you found that informative and that you can use some of those tips and drills that he provided. Actually, after we finished recording here, he went on for about another 30 minutes, and he was dispelling some lessons that big-name putting instructors give, and I don't really want to get into that, so I won't. So let's just say this is your last reminder for our giveaway provided by the Shivas Iron Society, shivas.org, shivas.org. And it's a limited edition, leather-bound signed copy of the great book, Golf in the Kingdom. And the book comes in its own handmade slipcase and individual gift box. It's really a phenomenal present, and we're going to be giving that away at the end of our next episode. We'll announce the winner from our random drawing of the names of your email addresses. So to enter, just send an email with the subject Kingdom to golfsmarter@ttour.com, and please include your name and mailing address. That way, if you win, we know where to send it. Don't forget to check out bunkershot.com, the online golf magazine for news articles and more, and pick up your Golf Smarter postage stamps. They come in sheets of 20 and can be picked up at zazzle.com/Fred Green. G-R-E-E-N-E. Zazzle has a bunch of Z's in it. Let everyone know that you're a golfer, and let them know that you golf smarter. You like that idea. We end with our quote of the week. I'd say it was submitted by another listener, but it's not. You know, but if you do have a favorite golf quote, something that you keep in your head while you're playing, send an email to me with the subject golf quote to golfsmarter@ttour.com. And this quote actually comes from the putting zone and was made by Tiger Woods after he won the PGA Championship at Medina. He said, "I felt like I could make anything. I kept saying all day, just putt to the picture, putt to the picture. That's the way I first learned how to putt." Dad actually knew what he was talking about. Thanks for listening to Golf Smarter. I'm Fred Green.